Support comes from Kappa, presenting An Evening with Fran Lebowitz, March 6th at the Southern Theater. The evening will feature an unapologetically opinionated talk moderated by Ann Fisher, audience Q&A, and book signing. Tickets at kappa.com.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. An Ohio couple has been identified as the team behind a neo-Nazi dissident homeschool network that has been sharing hate-filled lessons with more than 2,000 followers. Vice News reported last week that Logan and Katya Lawrence of Upper Sandusky have been operating their Telegram channel for 2.5 years, teaching parents how to indoctrinate their children and encouraging them to meet in real life. Vice News senior reporter David Gilbert has been covering the story. David Gilbert, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks, Ann. Good to be here.
How did you become aware of the whole dissident homeschool thing?
I was first alerted to it on Twitter when I saw a group of researchers who I follow tweeting about it. They had been tracking this group and they had put out a report on it a couple of weeks ago. And it hadn't really been picked up, but they were able to name the Lawrences as the couple who ran the group, and so that was my starting point. And then I was able to get the archives of the Telegram chat group and go through those and talk to people in the town about this couple.
What was the site like? It's been taken down now, right?
The Telegram group is actually still live, and I'm sad to say that the number of people who are following it has actually grown rather than decreased since the news about it broke. But the chat group where people interacted with the Lawrences and with each other and shared resources, that was deleted. So that chat group was mostly Katya Lawrence, who was known as Mrs. Saxon in the group. She shared the types of lessons that she was giving her four kids, links to resources for other kind of Nazi-inspired lesson plans or workbooks. And then people just shared their problems, asking for help about how to start homeschooling, about how to go about keeping the stuff that they were doing secret so that their kids wouldn't tell each other or tell other kids that they were interacting with. So it was kind of like any other parenting or homeschooling group. Just this one spoke openly about Nazism and about white supremacy.
I wonder if this kind of a group is necessarily unusual or not.
It is definitely unusual, I think, to be so open and so overt in the way that they discuss this stuff. They were not trying to hide it in any way. The channel isn't even private. If you go on Telegram and put in the name of it, you can find it very easily. And all this stuff is there out in the open. It's not hidden. I think that for me was the most surprising thing about this was that, yes, they're obviously, you know, doing it behind a cloak of anonymity because they weren't using their own names, but at the same time, they were very, very upfront about how they believed that the white race is superior and that that's what they wanted to teach their children. And it just shocked me that it was so open and so overt. Most of the time, these kind of ideas or ideologies are hidden behind kind of coded language or dog whistle rather than, you know, being so open.
You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about the reports of the Ohio couple. It's been identified as the team behind a neo-Nazi dissident homeschool network. It's been sharing hate-filled lessons with more than 2,000 followers. Vice News reported last week that Logan and Katya Lawrence of Upper Sandusky have been operating their Telegram channel since October 2021, teaching parents how to indoctrinate their children and encouraging them to meet in real life. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest, right now is David Gilbert. He's the senior reporter with Vice News who's been covering this issue. He covers disinformation, conspiracy theories, and online extremism and has been for the last decade. What can you tell us about Logan and Katya Lawrence?
So they are, Logan Lawrence is originally from Upper Sandusky. His family is based there. They run an insurance agency in the town. It's a pretty small town of 6,600 people. Katya Lawrence is originally from the Netherlands in Europe. She was born there, grew up there, went to college there. And then she met Logan Lawrence at a beer festival, Oktoberfest in Munich in Germany. He completed a minor in German language in Ohio State University. So he may have been there in Munich as part of that. We're not really sure. So they met at that festival, and then Katya Lawrence moved to the US and she became a naturalized citizen in 2017. And they now live in Upper Sandusky and they have four children, and they're a well-known couple in the community. I've spoken to many people who knew them and who are surprised at, you know, that they were doing this. One person who was at their wedding who said that they were, you know, just in complete shock that this was actually going on in the background. So at the same time, I've spoken to other people who said that Logan Lawrence has kind of, and I'll have more reporting coming out this week about this, looking at the background of how this came about. And there was definitely red flags that suggested that Logan Lawrence was definitely of this viewpoint.
I read in a community forum that the Lawrence, the insurance agency, his family owned one, he has since been fired from that. He doesn't have any role in it. And the community is talking about this, and members of the family made it clear that they were absolutely shocked and had absolutely no idea this was going on.
Yeah, so the insurance agency, who someone answered the phone to me, said they just didn't want to comment on it last week, but they did put out a statement on their website saying that they were shocked and abhorred the viewpoints expressed by Logan and Katya Lawrence. And on one Facebook group, Upper Sandusky Facebook group, Logan Lawrence's aunt kind of added to that comment and kind of said that the family is completely devastated by this. They've been crying for days. They, you know, they just don't know. At the same time, I'm speaking to other people who doubt the claim that they had no idea that that they held these views. Some people in the community don't believe that the family could not have known this, that it was quite obvious to some people. They said that this Logan Lawrence at least held these kinds of views. There are pictures of him in blackface costume at Halloween parties over several years, not just once, but over several years, that were deleted from a Facebook page last week. So while the family obviously has expressed, you know, their disgust and anger about this, there are still people in the community who are questioning how this came about or how this was allowed to kind of develop and take hold.
What do we know about the reach of their network? There's these references to more than 2,000, but what does that mean? How far and wide?
It's hard to say exactly. You know, there was 2,500 members when I first joined the group, and that has since grown to over 3,000 members now. Obviously, a lot of those people who joined are, you know, journalists or researchers or just people curious to see what's going on in the group. But it's hard to say exactly how many of those 2,500 people, because the membership list isn't public. We don't know if they are all parents or who exactly they are. But what we do know is that the group wasn't just sharing content online. It was also urging people to go and meet up to what they called pool parties, which is kind of this white supremacist groups have these meetups in real life. They paint them as these kind of very wholesome activities that are cookouts or, you know, going to meet in a park or picnics, stuff like that. But what it actually is recruiting for other more extreme right-wing groups like Patriot Front, like the National Justice Party, or the right stuff. So that to me was one of the most concerning aspects of this, that the Lawrences, and I know I've learned since about where they hold meetups and how they try to recruit people in Upper Sandusky itself. And they're clearly believe in this, their ideology so much that they want people to kind of create new groups in their own communities. And people seem to want to do that as well, because it's several members of the group reached out asking for email addresses for, you know, because you first have to get vetted to be allowed to join these groups.
Uh-huh.
So people wanted that information, which is quite disturbing.
As far as the reach goes, when we talk about, is there any way to know if they're all in the U.S. or if they go if they're members outside the U.S.?
It seems to be primarily in the U.S. Now, there was definitely some international members. There was one person in the U.K. who reached out and was looking for information, and Katja Lawrence was then able to put him in touch with a known white supremacist in the U.K. as well, who is a very well-known figure. She had contact information for that person, which she shared with this member.
David Gilbert, what's the curriculum like? I mean, what sort of stuff are they putting out there? How do they package it?
So one of the most recent things that they put up was this lesson plan for Martin Luther King's birthday. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebrated it last month. In regular public schools, you're taught about the work of the civil rights leader and everything he did. In the dissident homeschool version of that, you open up the PDF that you can download, and the PDF begins with an Adolf Hitler quote. And then it goes on to explain how, in their view, Martin Luther King Jr. was an evil person, effectively. And it gives a completely distorted view of the history of Martin Luther King. And that's kind of typical of all the lesson plans that you see. In some respects, like a normal kind of, whether it's like in one, the maths lesson plan, it looks like a regular lesson plan looking at statistics, but it's actually talking about crime statistics in Black neighborhoods and how Black people are more statistically likely to have to perpetrate violent crime. And the stats have been completely distorted to make it, again, fit their worldview. So no matter what lessons the kids are being taught, it seems every part of it is infused with some sort of hateful ideology.
You know, Ohio doesn't have a lot of regulation when it comes to homeschooling curriculum, but we found and we know that it's better than most states, and Ohio is looking at even deregulating even more oversight of homeschools. Is that any sense? Mm-hmm. Can you give us about what kind of feedback you were getting from lawmakers?
Yeah, it's split. Lots of lawmakers, as you said, want to push for less transparency and more pushing more money, public money, towards homeschoolers. One bill is seeking to, the tax break at the moment for homeschoolers is $250 to buy, you know, paper, pens, any other educational resources. And they want to increase that to $2,000. As you said, the level of transparency, it's better than in some states, but it's still pretty weak. One person I was talking to who is in the Ohio homeschooling group, and she described herself as being at the other end, the liberal end of the spectrum. But she was saying that from her point of view, she doesn't think, like, when she sent through her curriculum for her kid, she got a reply back within minutes. And it seemed to her that it was kind of a rubber stamp type situation where they didn't really go through what she was going to be doing. They just she sent them something that's good enough, and they sent back the approval. So it doesn't seem like because it's up to the superintendents to approve this. And I spoke to the superintendent in Wyandot County, where the Lawrences are operating, and mm-hmm. he couldn't speak specifically about this case, but he was saying that, like, in a roundabout way, what he said was there was very, very little he could do to sanction this family for what they were doing, because ultimately there was nothing illegal in what they were doing.
What kind of blowback have you been getting on social media?
Yeah, like, I suppose I'm quite used to it at this stage, covering yeah. these groups. But a lot of it is, like, on Telegram, because I was in these groups and some other groups for people who are kind of supporting the Lawrences and promoting their work. You get sent, you know, memes and threats. But these people are typically, they don't know where I live or anything like that. So it's a lot of it is just keyboard warriors who are angry that someone is criticizing their group or has named someone belonging to them and has revealed their identity. And then other, which, you know, that kind of blowback is kind of natural. I'm not natural, but I guess I'm used to it.
Yeah, right.
Interestingly, there's a lot of criticism from people in Upper Sandusky who feel that the media coverage of this story shouldn't really be happening, that we should just kind of move on, that we're damaging the reputation of the town, and that this was just two people, isolated incident, and that they were pushing this ideology, and that, you know, we shouldn't really be talking much more about it. But from my reporting since then and talking to people in the town, the issue of kind of an undercurrent of racism within the town is much bigger than just two people. But there seems to be a lot of people out there who don't want that discussed very much.
And as far as how were Logan and Katya Lawrence identified? Because they went by another name, an alias on the website. Mm-hmm.
So the researchers at the Anonymous Comrades Collective, they're an anti-fascist research group, they were able to go through the details of when they were talking. It's Mr. and Mrs. Saxon was the name that they used in the group. When they were chatting to other members, they kind of gave away some details about where they lived, biographical details about the fact that, you know, describing where the town was, describing when Katya Lawrence became a naturalized citizen. And then one of the key data points was the fact that she mentioned that she had a dog named Blondie. And Blondie was the name of Hitler's dog, of course. So when she gave away that detail, they were then able to find a Katya Lawrence on Facebook who had posted a picture of her dog, which was also called Blondie. And by using that, then they were able to go back and match up her details with the details from that she shared in the group. So it was not an easy thing to find their information, but they were, I guess, they gave away so much of their lives kind of anonymously that once an identity was found, that it was very easy then to match up those biographical details with the real life Katya and Logan Lawrence.
David Gilbert, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
It's David Gilbert. He's a senior reporter with Vice News. He's been covering disinformation, conspiracy theories, and online extremism for the last decade. And he reported last week that Logan and Katya Lawrence of Upper Sandusky have been operating their Telegram channel. It's a neo-Nazi dissident homeschool network for 2.5 years, teaching parents how to indoctrinate their children and encouraging them to meet in real life. We have more. We're going to kind of drill down on where Ohio stands on this, what kind of regulations are out there, if any. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. An Ohio couple has been identified as the team behind a neo-Nazi dissident homeschool network that has been sharing hate-filled lessons with more than 2,000 followers. It's now up to about 3,000. Vice News reported last week that Logan and Katya Lawrence of Upper Sandusky have been operating their Telegram channel for 2.5 years, teaching parents how to indoctrinate their children and encouraging them to meet in real life. Ohio state lawmakers have condemned the Telegram channel, which is since, well, it's not exactly shut down, but that's about it. They've condemned the Telegram channel. Haley B. Miller is political reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. Welcome to the show.
Good to be back.
Hey, we reached out to the Ohio Department of Education. We were sent a statement from Dr. Stephanie K. Siddons. She's interim superintendent of public instruction. We won't read the whole statement, but she did say, quote, "I am outraged and saddened. There's absolutely no place for hate-filled, divisive, and hurtful instruction in Ohio schools, including our state's homeschooling community. I emphatically and categorically denounce the racist, anti-Semitic, and fascist ideology and materials being circulated as reported in recent media stories," end quote. You know, there apparently is a place for hate-filled, divisive, and hurtful instruction, at least in the homeschooling community.
Yeah, it's really hard to regulate the homeschool community in general, and Ohio law really doesn't have a ton of rules in place for this. Parents who homeschool their children have to commit to 900 hours of teaching a year. They have to make sure that, you know, they're teaching subjects like reading, music, math, science, history. But that's pretty much about it. There are also exemptions. Interestingly, you know, parents don't have to teach anything that conflicts with their religious beliefs. So ODE does not review or approve curriculum, and, you know, students have to complete an assessment every year just to monitor,
like, some testing thing.
Yeah, I believe so. And it's not, I'm not 100% sure what that looks like. And I don't know at this point if the students as part who are part of this dissident homeschool were complying with assessment requirements. I think that's part of what ODE is looking into. But as I was talking to someone about this, who's, you know, familiar with the homeschool world, she made the point, you know, you can still be being fed neo-Nazi propaganda and pass a pretty basic assessment.
Let's see, Sarah in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I'm in Westerville, mm-hmm. and I started homeschooling in Ohio when we moved here in 2001. My youngest is now a junior in high school. He's actually attending an IB program at our local school. And I just wanted to say that a few things when you were talking about superintendents and districts. We live in a really good district. We have a good relationship with, or at least I did as a homeschooler, with our local school district.
Uh-huh.
But not all school districts are like that. And some of the superintendents, in fact, most of the superintendents, I believe, job out the responsibility for looking at the curriculum that homeschoolers are required by the regulations to submit every year. And often the people to whom these are jobbed out, these responsibilities are jobbed out, they don't know the regulations themselves, and they tell homeschoolers incorrect things, that they've submitted information incorrectly, and that, you know, that they are doing things wrong, and most homeschoolers are actually submitting things correctly. The ones I know.
So I'm curious. You liked the oversight of Westerville schools.
We had a good experience with uh-huh. Westerville schools, and all three of my kids transitioned into the International Baccalaureate program when they were juniors in high school. They did quite well. My oldest is in grad school, uh-huh. my second one's in college, my third is a junior at the high school. So we had a good experience. And as I said, not all districts are like that. Not everybody has that positive experience with the district
because the district
they end up
just
with
shop
people
it
knocking
out
on their doors. You know, they knock on their doors and tell them they're going to report their kids as truant when they've actually followed the law.
Oh, okay. Would you like to see more regulation or less, as it looks like they're planning to do in the Ohio General Assembly?
Well, I just want to say one more thing about related to regulations is most of the homeschoolers I know are not interested in receiving more state money in return for more regulation. Because I think that was a comment that came up a little bit ago.
Okay.
Right. And I would also say that even in the public schools, you say that, you know, there's a place for hate-filled speech in homeschooling. Well, I have seen that in public schools as well. So I don't think it's simply an issue of it being only in these kind of rogue, or what I would see as rogue homeschool groups. It's in other places as well.
Okay. Well, Sarah, thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we are talking about the news of the neo-Nazi homeschooling program. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So do we know how Ohio compares to other states when it comes to rules for homeschooling?
So I'll preface this by saying that no state heavily regulates homeschooling because that's not really possible. But Ohio does have a few more rules in place than other states. You know, we have the requirement that certain subjects are taught. We have, you know, criteria for the qualifications of parents who are teaching their students. And then there's a notification aspect of this. For example, Illinois and Missouri, they don't have to notify their local districts of their intent to homeschool their children. They can just go ahead and do it. There are other states that don't require certain subjects to be taught, like Ohio does. So I think there was like a map somewhere online of, you know, mapping out different state regulations, and it basically placed Ohio somewhere in the middle. But it's still, you know, for a lot of reasons, homeschool is difficult to regulate much more than what Ohio does.
There are about 51,000 or more than 51,000 students in Ohio who are homeschooled. That's like the size of Columbus City schools.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, it's a small percentage of, you know, K through 12 students in the state overall. But that's also, you know, not 51,000 is not a small number by any stretch. And, you know, a lot of people have come out since this story was published saying, you know, that, you know, neo-Nazis are an outlier in an otherwise, you know, fairly functional homeschool system in the state.
Fred in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Fred.
Hi. How are state tests administered? I know in public schools, there's a whole process and a lot of auditing and whatever, and sanctions if teachers mess up. And then is that data ever aggregated for all of our homeschools?
I'm not 100% sure how they oversee the assessment process. I just know that that is an annual requirement, you know, for homeschooling students. But it does, you know, make a good point that, you know, this is homeschooling is kind of a weird area for the local school districts. Someone described it to me as another unfunded mandate that local districts have to deal with. So even if, you know, students are participating in assessments every year, aren't really sure, you know, how thorough those assessments are.
When you say assessment, are you talking about state standardized testing?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they don't define that in the laws or anything.
Yeah, it just says, you know, I think, you know, it's a sort of a state test to monitor progress and ensure that, you know, homeschool students are kind of keeping up with where they should be.
And then it's on a case-by-case basis depending on what district you're in, how they manage things.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I mean, with that, you know, previous caller had a good relationship with their district, it sounds like, but you know, your different districts have different leaderships and different sizes too. You know, I would imagine it would be harder for a large district like Columbus City Schools to manage, you know, a homeschooling population when they already have a lot of other students to manage. You know, it might be. And then with smaller districts, there's a question of how many resources they have. And, you know, it's a lot for, you know, a school district to consider when they already have a lot of other things to oversee and manage.
And the state does it. The state gives homeschooling parents kind of what amounts to a stipend to buy supplies, but they don't fund school districts to do their part of to play their role in all of this.
Right. It's just kind of something that, you know,
they're expected to do.
Yeah.
Okay, Fred, thanks for that call. Everybody else, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What are lawmakers hearing from people about this? Have you found out whether they're getting a lot of calls one way or the other on this issue?
I'm not sure what lawmakers have been hearing from their constituents, but, you know, there are two camps that have emerged that I'm seeing, and it more or less falls along party lines. Talked to a couple of Republicans about this who have said, you know, this shouldn't necessarily be used to put more restrictions on homeschooling parents. You know, they consider this an extreme example of how the system can be exploited. Not, you know, there are plenty of homeschooling parents out there who aren't teaching their children about neo-Nazism. But you do have Democrats on the other side of this saying, you know, that this is a sign that there should be more regulation, and certainly not less regulation, which, as you pointed out, is being proposed right now.
Right. And I wondered whether that's in Senate Bill 1, and that's the favored, you know, that's the number one bill in the Senate, meaning that's Senate President Huffman's big bill. It's something he was put forth last session in the 11th hour, brought it out first in this session. What is he saying about this?
So
as far as relaxing requirements, the few that exist.
Yeah. So this bill, and it is a huge bill that would, overhaul oversight of education as a whole, but the homeschooling part of it would, relax certain requirements, like saying, you know, parents don't have to have certain educational...
Like they don't have to have even a high school degree, because that's all that's required now.
Right. So they don't really have to have any qualifications to teach. The new director of education, or whatever the job title is, wouldn't be allowed to impose any more requirements on homeschoolers. And, you know, Huffman is on board with this. This is a big priority for him for a lot of reasons. But he is in that first camp that I was talking about that's saying, you know, he thinks what... you know, the dissident homeschool is doing is abhorrent, but he also doesn't think other homeschooling parents should be punished for this, and clearly thinks that there are perhaps too many regulations even right now.
Just asking for them to have at least a high school degree or an equivalency, and asking them to submit lesson plans.
Right.
And notify their district.
Yeah, so...
That's too much.
Apparently.
Wow. Haley B. Miller, thanks a lot for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Haley B. Miller is political reporter for USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. She's covering the state response to the news that an Ohio couple has been identified as leaders of the neo-Nazi dissident homeschool Telegram channel, distributing lesson plans to more than, about 2,500 members. We're talking about how these groups operate and the investigation into their activities by the Ohio Department of Education. Take your calls, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. An Ohio couple has been identified as the team behind a neo-Nazi dissident homeschool network that has been sharing hate-filled lessons with more than 2,000 followers. Vice News reported last week that Logan and Katya Lawrence of Upper Sandusky have been operating their Telegram channel for 2.5 years, teaching parents how to indoctrinate their children and encouraging them to meet in real life. Some are calling for more oversight of homeschool curricula. The Coalition for Responsible Home Education is a nonpartisan organization created to educate and inform citizens, lawmakers, and service providers about the protections homeschooled children and youth need. Carmen Longoria Green is an attorney and board president of the coalition. Carmen Longoria Green, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
What did you think when you heard about this homeschooling program?
I was disappointed, but not surprised. It's certainly not the first time that I have heard about homeschooling being used to instill propaganda of this level in homeschool children.
You were homeschooled from 1st through 12th grade in Missouri, a state with almost no regulations. But by the way, that's pretty typical when it comes to homeschooling. Why has homeschooling largely been deregulated across the country? Do you know? Can you talk about that?
Yes. So this history of the deregulation of homeschooling really starts in the 1970s, 1980s. Far-right fundamentalist Christian parents saw public schools as being a really bad place for them to send their children because those public schools weren't going to teach their kids the type of ideology that those parents wanted their children to learn. So in 1983, a man named Michael Ferris started an organization called the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, or HSLDA. And they started a political movement in the name of parental rights, something we at CRHE called parental rights extremism, where they basically said that we as parents get to decide everything that our children were here, and we get to limit their access to information from the outside world. And that means we should get to homeschool and homeschool with no oversight or as little oversight as possible from the state. And they basically created a political movement of parents that are principally more far-right religious extremists of the Christian fundamentalist variety. And principally, those parents basically inundated state capitals across the country and bullied legislators into taking out what little regulations there was for homeschooling, or to completely allow homeschooling to happen in the states where it was previously banned. And so since about the 90s, homeschooling has been completely or nearly completely deregulated. There are still some states like Ohio that have some restrictions, but we at CRHE would not say that any state has adequate requirements to make sure that homeschooled students are receiving a safe and adequate education at home.
I mean, and Ohio is looking to dismantle what little regulation there is.
Correct. And you mentioned in the earlier segment and earlier in the hour how it seemed a bit outrageous that even requiring something like a high school diploma would be seen as too much for home parents
or
to have.
Equivalent.
Or the equivalent, exactly. But consider that a lot in many states, about half the states, you don't even have to have graduated high school yourself in order to teach your child through high school and then award them a quote unquote high school diploma based upon your instruction to them. That is how far we have gone in terms of deregulation.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Elizabeth in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello.
Go ahead.
So I just wanted to clarify the assessment regulations for Ohio.
Thanks.
I was homeschooled, and I homeschooled my son for a few years. When I was growing up, our homeschool group hired a group to come in and do the testing all together. But now with the technology, you can do state testing online from home, meaning that, you know, perhaps if the parents really wanted to, you know, influence the scores, they could. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the option of having a licensed teacher review a portfolio of work that each child has done and sign off on that. And so that's where some of the more extreme groups are getting their assessments done is finding a teacher who agrees with what they're doing and having that teacher look over the work that they've done.
And now they're thinking about eliminating this process altogether, Elizabeth, in Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I mean, I see both sides of it, especially considering, as I said, you know, parents or, you know, the teacher who's overseeing the assessment could, you know, have some influence on how that assessment turns out.
Thanks for your call, Elizabeth. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Carmen.
What I said was absolutely accurate. There are instances in which parents influence the test scores. That's one reason why CREG advocates that test scores, if they're a standardized test or any other type of assessment, has to be done through the supervision of the local school district so that parents can't influence test scores in that way. I know we've seen instances in Pennsylvania, which has a similar type of regulation as Ohio, where there would be a single certified teacher that the entire homeschool group in, say, a county or a local area would all hire and know that that person, they already knew that the requirement was, hey, we're hiring you to just rubber stamp what we're doing. And that's how they would always satisfy the assessment requirements year after year. So she's absolutely right. What she described is something we at CREG have seen.
What do we know? I mean, given the fact that there's little or no regulation in most states, how similar or different are the outcome-based standards for homeschoolers compared to public school students?
We actually have very little information about how homeschool children do, and that's because far-right advocacy groups like the HSLDA have basically restricted the ability to determine what these outcomes are. The few studies that do exist tend to have a lot of selection bias. For instance, the HSLDA would basically ask parents to send in their children's standardized test scores to show how good they're doing at homeschooling. Obviously, that is not going to produce the full spectrum of results. I know I can say for myself, my parents stopped providing the instruction by the time I was in middle school. I was handed textbooks that my parents bought, and I was told, okay, you're going to teach yourself chemistry this year. And that's what I did. I still had a better homeschool experience than a lot of individuals I know. I have met individuals who did not learn their multiplication tables until they're 18 years old. Sometimes it's because their parents, for whatever reason, do not believe in providing their children with an adequate education. Sometimes it's because their religious beliefs, particularly about the type of education that women shouldn't receive. So I've met a lot of women growing up who were homeschooled in far-right fundamentalist Christian enclaves who were not provided a math or science education because women weren't expected to need that because their job was to stay home and be wives and mothers and to homeschool their children in turn. So while here you're having an example that's what's catching everyone's attention in the news is a far-right neo-Nazism being taught in homeschoolers. Yes, that is an extreme situation that I've only seen probably one other time previously. But you do have very often times when someone believes, hey, I do not think that women should receive an equal education to men, so I'm going to homeschool my daughters in this particular way. That is very common. Or you see instances where they use homeschooling to inculcate what I would call a white supremacy light ideology in their children. For instance, there are curriculum that are very popular produced by Bob Jones University and Becca Press. And these are used by many, many homeschoolers. And this curriculum does not teach history the way you would have learned it in public school about, say, Martin Luther King Jr., about the civil rights movement, about things like that. It has an alternative version of history that completely whitewashes what actually happened and actually doesn't even teach the civil rights movement as a good thing or that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a hero who we should all revere. I didn't learn the truth about him and that he was an individual who deserved my respect and admiration until I got out of the home and was in college.
So I was going to ask you the nature of your homeschooling curricula. I mean, your folks were among those who had more of a far-right Christian nationalist view on things?
Yes, absolutely. I had science books that taught me that the world was only 6,000 years old and that the Loch Ness Monster was real and was actually a dinosaur living in a lake in Scotland, and that dinosaurs still existed in the Congo somewhere. Like, my science curriculum was completely antithetical to what you would expect a science curriculum to be provided to children, because there was no checks on anything. There was nothing in Missouri to make sure I was receiving an adequate education.
I mean, in some people's minds, this would almost be considered like a form of child abuse or neglect.
Yes, yes. But because of the far-right elements in the homeschooling lobby, they have succeeded in removing from many states in the child abuse and neglect definition by statute a lack of education due to homeschooling. For example, in Utah, I believe, they actually modified the definition of educational neglect in the state so that you could not, by definition, ever be found to have committed educational neglect if you say that you're homeschooling. And of course, it's one of those states where you just send in a piece of paper to the superintendent and say you're homeschooling and no one checks again. So that is something that the far right lobby has noticed could happen, that could be used to protect children, a finding of educational neglect, and they are actively working to change the law so that you still can't do anything to protect children. In Virginia, for example, there's something called a religious exemption statute. The statute says that if you have a religious belief against public school instruction, the mandate that you educate your child is completely removed from the law. So all you have to do to take advantage of this statute is send a letter to the school superintendent when the child becomes a mandatory age of education, so about 5 or 6. And then no one ever checks in on that child again after you send in that letter saying you want to take advantage of this religious exemption. And you could be, say, a neighbor or family member of this child, and you know they're 12 years old and they cannot read.
Yeah.
Even if you like go to CPS, you try to make a report to the school board, you try to do something, there is nothing that they can do, because what those parents have done is completely legal under state law.
Can you give me a thumbnail on the pros and cons of more oversight? What would you like to see happen? Because you're not anti-homeschooling, you just want it to be what you see as responsible.
That's absolutely true. CRHC was founded by homeschool alumni. We are run still principally by homeschool alumni. We want homeschooling to be used as a loving tool to prepare children for an open future. We have seen many people on our staff have been homeschooled in ways that prepared them very well for their futures, and they want that opportunity for other students as well. So we advocate a series of policy changes that would help ensure that all homeschooled children receive that type of homeschooling experience. So one thing is a real assessment requirement. Now, assessment doesn't always need to be standardized tests. As your Carla earlier mentioned, Ohio provides a portfolio review. We think that's a great way to help show that, you know, a child is making appropriate advances year after year, but the portfolio review should be performed under the jurisdiction of the state school board, the local superintendent. It should not be something that a parent can basically pay off a local certified teacher to rubber stamp. And it should be significant enough that you can tell if the child is only receiving a one-sided, more propaganda version of history. Can they tell you that the Holocaust actually happened, if that's an age-appropriate requirement for that student at that stage? Can they tell you who Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was? It shouldn't be something where a parent could be only providing an inaccurate version of history or a version of how the world works to a student, and the student could still ace the requirement. And it shouldn't be an assessment that can be completely avoided entirely by the parent. We also advocate that all parents should have at least a high school diploma or its equivalent in order to homeschool. And we also think that individuals who've been convicted of crimes against students, against children, should not be allowed to homeschool. Right now, only 2 states have that limitation. So if you have been found guilty of harming children, you can still homeschool children yourself and therefore have them completely cut off from all mandatory reporters. And that is a problem we are seeing pop up in state after state, and we want to see a stop to that as well.
And you have a website. Can people find all of this information on a website?
Absolutely. Our website is responsiblehomeschooling.org. We always love to hear one from other homeschool alumni who agree with us and want to join us. We have a sign-up box for those who are interested in also advocating for homeschool students. And we love, love, love hearing from homeschooling parents who, like your earlier callers, can describe like what it was for them working with the local state superintendent, where it worked well, what didn't, how they think that other children can be better served and protected. A lot of homeschooling parents can see the problems that's going on, and we'd love them to join in our advocacy.
Carmen Longoria Green, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Carmen Longoria Green is an attorney and board president of the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. We'll post a link to their website at wosu.org/allsides. Thanks so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.